Hey, stranger. The Opus is moving out and into a new season as we continue to explore the ongoing legacy of music's most iconic records. I'm your host, Adam Unz, and this season we're celebrating the 45th anniversary of Billy Joel's fifth studio album, The Stranger, a record whose critical and commercial success catapulted the piano man to superstardom. Helping us explore this classic collection are artists like Billy Joel's drummer Liberty DeVito, Regina Spektor, Andrew McMahon in the Wilderness, Rozzy, Lissy, The Arkells, Bayside's Anthony Renari, and Ben Folds. Great music shapes lives, shakes rafters, and embeds itself into our culture. So let's find out why only the good die young as we deep dive into The Stranger. The new season is out now and is brought to you by the Consequence Podcast Network and Sony Legacy Recordings. Find us at consequence.net or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/Amazon Prime for details.
Consequence Podcast Network. Hello, and welcome to the Spark Parade, where I geek out with artists and entertainers about their cultural spark of inspiration. I'm Adam Unz, at Spark Parade on all social media. Thanks ever so much for joining me. My guest today is writer-director Weston Rizzulli, who spoke to me about his spark, Hayao Miyazaki's animated classic, Princess Mononoke. It was really fun talking to Weston about an animated feature because I think it's the first one I've talked to anyone about on this show. Or maybe I just can't remember everything I've talked to all of my guests about. So if you feel like investigating this for me, have at it. But, anyway, it's a great chat. So let's get straight to it. Quick Weston facts. Award-winning American writer-director Weston Rizzulli grew up in Park City, Utah. His feature debut, Riddle of Fire, premiered at the Cannes Film Festival in 2023. At 13, he was sent to boarding school in Southern California. He attended California College of the Arts in San Francisco, where he studied illustration, graphic design, and fashion design with the intention to apply those mediums towards filmmaking. In 2015, he founded Anexia, a production company based in Los Angeles. Riddle of Fire is out right now, and you should watch it, because it's really good. Quick Princess Mononoke facts. Princess Mononoke is a 1997 Japanese animated epic historical fantasy film written and directed by Hayao Miyazaki and animated by Studio Ghibli. Princess Mononoke is set in the late Muromachi period of Japan and includes fantasy elements. The story follows a young prince named Ashitaka and his involvement in a struggle between the gods of the forest and the humans who consume its resources. The film also deals with themes of Shinto and environmentalism. It was released in Japan in July of 1997 and in the United States in October of 1999. It was a critical and commercial blockbuster, becoming the highest-grossing film in Japan of 1997, and also held Japan's box office record for domestic films until 2001's Spirited Away, another Miyazaki film. It was dubbed into English with a script by Neil Gaiman and initially distributed in North America by Miramax, where it sold well on home media despite not performing strongly at the box office. The film greatly increased Studio Ghibli's popularity and influence outside Japan. And there you have it. Time to dig into the main event. Here comes my chat with Weston Rizzulli about Princess Mononoke. Do you remember watching Princess Mononoke for the first time?
Yes, I do. I do. I remember. So the first time I ever saw it was I was in my boarding school, Kate School in Carpinteria near Santa Barbara, and our library had a bunch of DVDs that you could rent, and they had a good Miyazaki collection. And I had only seen Spirited Away when I was like in middle school, And then I found, I didn't really know who he was. And then I sort of discovered all these DVDs in our library at school. And I would rent them from the library. And I specifically remember watching Princess Mononoke on a DVD on my laptop in my boarding room, I mean boarding school dorm room bed on my laptop. And it was, yeah, that was it. And I've always had kind of a fondness of watching movies on a laptop in bed, because it's sort of like, it's like, it's kind of like reading in bed. So it's a more like intimate experience, I guess. But yeah, and that's where I discovered a lot of Miyazaki, Mononoke, Howl's Moving Castle, Castle in the Sky. Yeah, that was kind of the first time.
Cool. Yeah. Just touching on that, watching like DVDs on a small screen or whatever, there was some, I can't remember who the director was, who I was reading an interview with, and they were talking about, you know, the debate between directors who think cinema is for the big screen and it's you know, an abomination to watch everything on a small screen, and then this guy was just like, who the fuck cares, like people can watch things however they want to, and it's, you know, it's about joy and just, you know, getting what you can out of movies. And I kind of, you know, I think there is definitely a lot of pleasure in watching things on a big screen, but having that kind of intimate experience of, like, especially when you're a kid, like secret in your bed away from everybody else, getting to just like have your own little world. I really like that.
Yeah, it's like two different ways, or there's multiple ways to experience a movie. I love going to the cinema. It's a very grand experience, like going to a Coliseum or a play or something. There's an epic part about it. There's certain movies that I think are very, very, it's very beneficial to see them on the big screen. And there's other ones that I would prefer to see on a smaller screen that have a more intimate thing. Yeah. And as growing up, I didn't really care that much about if it was like in the theater or on my TV. I really did fall in love with going to the cinema though when I moved to LA about 9 years ago, because it was such a good, great city. It's one of the best cities to go see movies in theaters. So that was kind of when I really like got into seeing it in theaters. But yeah, they both have their pros and cons, and I don't know, everything is good to experience in both ways.
Yeah. And I think for something like this, getting to see it and appreciate it in as many ways as you can is great. I mean, the first time I saw it was on a big screen. I watched it a couple of days ago on a TV. And I think it doesn't, yeah, I don't know. This is just getting way into the weeds. Who cares? You can watch movies however you want to. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, but I mean, with Mononoke though, I think it's both great. I mean, it's an epic, so naturally it would naturally live better on the big screen in a massive theater. But it can, yeah, it's great. It's great on a small screen. But there is something really, really cool about watching anime in a theater, because you so rarely get the opportunity to see anime or animated films in the cinema, I think. So there is something really special. Like if any anime movies I love, if they're screening in LA, I always try to go to those, because I mean, seeing Ghost in the Shell at the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood is like, that's a really special experience. So
yeah. And I think this, you know, I don't think so, I know so, this movie's important in this country, at least, bringing anime to a wider audience and making it so that it was something that people would go to see in the theater and actually take seriously and understand that, you know, it's not cartoons that kids are watching, which is, again, great in its own way, but that this is a very different thing. It's very expansive, detailed, complex storytelling. And it's incredible. I mean, there's a lot to dig into here, but
yeah. Speaking of that though, I mean, speaking of that, I don't think American audiences are, I don't think American audiences are very different than Japanese audiences. I don't think, I mean, anime is in Japan is not, it's intended for all ages. And I don't think America has not really gotten there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not really, I mean, aside from there's hardcore fans. And I mean, yeah, Miyazaki is like a mainstream director now in America, but even still, like, you know, I don't think it's really like, unless you are part of that kind of, the people that know him and understand it, like, unless you're that, it's not really, I don't think it's even kind of, it's not truly mainstream for an American audience.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I was doing some research for this, I saw somebody talking about how, you know, he gets called Japan's Walt Disney. And they said that's a little bit like saying Paul McCartney is the British Justin Bieber, that it's like they're two very different things. The, overlap in the Venn diagram is animation. But outside of that, it's like completely different disciplines and completely different worlds.
Yeah.
But also, Miyazaki has talked about even this film, like acknowledging that kids are going to watch it, that animation is appealing to kids, but saying that doesn't make him want to shy away from the violence to, keep broader, more adult themes out of it, because he said that's real. Like, kids should be exposed to that kind of stuff. Kids should know that, the world has those things in it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he's one of the smartest humans on earth right now, I think. And yeah, that's part of it, is he respects kids as understanding things as well or better than adults, which I also think too. Like, kids can experience things. They don't really jump to logic as so many adults do. And often that can be a better perception of understanding art and cinema. So yeah, he truly respects children and also is sort of believes in educating younger minds in those ways, which I also agree with.
Yeah. And not to labor the lazy comparison to Disney, but I think one of the key differences is Disney has very, there isn't a lot of moral ambiguity. There isn't a lot of room for shades of gray. It's all black and white. And Miyazaki generally, but this film in particular, the idea of like heroes and villains, everything's a bit blurred. People are complex. Everyone's motivations, people can have, be motivated by good and bad things and can act in good and bad ways. And there are all of these characters who show these, multiple facets to their personality and have a moral arc that's a lot more involved than just saying, this is the villain, this is the bad person who does the bad things. And I think that's one of his greatest skills, is being able to tell stories in a way that it's respectful to those characters, to acknowledge that, people, and when we're talking about anthropomorphic beings in the forest, even that having complexity in the way that these characters are portrayed is really interesting and makes for a better story, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. That's life. That's life. And yeah, it's a huge thing that is, very, very complex, and something that I don't think it doesn't really agree with American audiences, but I'm so glad that American audiences do love him and have accepted him.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite things about him.
Yeah. I'm thinking in particular about like Lady Eboshi, who I think is the closest that the movie has to a villain, who, there's the side of it where she's doing things with this town and manufacturing that are destroying the environment, but she's also protecting the people who she cares about, who she sees as vulnerable, like lepers and sex workers, and her motives are complex as well.
Justified. Yeah, absolutely. No, those are the best characters. That's what life is, though. Everyone wants to see themselves as the good guy, and everyone wants to see other people as the bad guy. That's a very American thing, and kind of just a worldly thing as well. But yeah, it's hard, and that's why the stories are so good, too. There's a lot to consider and a lot to be part of, and it's cool. But it's like life, and it's kind of hard to get those into stories, especially stories that are kind of more family friendly and things. And it's something that he does so well, and something that I hope to achieve too, to a certain point.
What you said about, American audiences or, American storytelling, being very different, and American audiences maybe not being able to appreciate this kind of storytelling as much, when this movie was being brought to this country, Harvey Weinstein wanted to tear it apart and, cut 40 minutes of it and make it into like a tight 90, and wanted to rearrange the story to make it more easily digestible and all that kind of stuff. And the fact that they managed to, for the most part, leave the film intact.
Yeah, they did. So Disney had a deal with Ghibli. For a long time, they would distribute all of Ghibli, but Mononoke was too dark. It was too dark for Disney, so they handed it off to Miramax, Harvey Weinstein's company. And he, as you said, he wanted to cut a ton. And then Suzuki, Miyazaki's producer, sent a note and a katana, a samurai sword that said no cuts to Weinstein, and which I think is like the fucking coolest, most badass, like so elegant, yet also like a fucking hardcore threat, you know? It's like,
right,
like here's your sword. If you cut it, like you better fucking have your sword ready because like, yeah, it will come after you. And yeah, they got it. And then yeah, Miyazaki defeated him.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah, it's a cool story for sure.
Time for a quick break because somebody's got to keep the lights on around here, but we'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video, find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
And then, obviously, outside of what happened with this movie, Harvey Weinstein's a great guy and has done, you know, nothing but great things. But in this, you know, the story of how he treated this film is like a microcosm to me of his kind of ruthlessness.
I think you have to clarify that that was a joke.
Yeah, I think the people who listen to this, okay, this show understand. Yeah, he is a piece of shit. Okay, real piece of shit.
Yeah, of course.
But the way he, how petulant he was as producer and how like convinced of his own greatness and infallibility he was, that they did test screenings of this movie as it was. And he said, the reviews are going to show, or, you know, there was like, it had a limited release or something. And there are going to be reviews that show that I was right. And people are going to say it's too long. Nobody said anything about that. And his reaction wasn't, oh, people actually really love this. He just buried it, didn't really promote it, didn't give it a wide release, and just said, fuck it. And I don't know how it would have done in more enthusiastic hands, or if it would have made a difference, but that's just another.
Yeah, I mean, he's a piece of shit and a fucking idiot. I mean, a lot of producers are dumbasses, and well, I mean, you can't put your faith in those people to like have taste at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right about that. And because also like, yeah, speaking of the promotion, like I do have a very specific memory of seeing it in Blockbuster as a kid. I was, you know, going in the anime aisle and like looking at all the titles of anime. And I remember seeing the cover for Princess Mononoke, and it was kind of this ambiguous like image of Ashitaka, like kind of in the dark, but it was Princess Mononoke. And as a like an 8-year-old boy, I was like, I don't want to see a movie about a princess.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being like an 8-year-old boy and being like, oh, it's about a princess? Like, I'm not watching that. Like, I don't know. I don't know. There's something. I mean, obviously, like, it's a great title and everything. But yeah, there was something that I regret not seeing it earlier and being I don't know, deterred by the title or something.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just speaking about like anime, I guess, and Blockbuster, and I had this, it's kind of a little off topic, but it's on anime. So I have this really crazy memory, big memory of being in Blockbuster and looking at anime titles. And I saw the cover for Akira in the like DVD or whatever. And I saw it and I was like, whoa, what is that? That looks so cool. And I turned it over and I looked at it and it said rated R. And I was like, holy shit. How can a cartoon be rated R? You know, I'm like 8 years old. And I was like, it felt really dangerous all of a sudden. And I was like, oh, and I kind of put it down carefully and like didn't even dare like ask my mom to rent it, you know? And then that was the first time I had, that was my first memory of the Akira. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Anime is like, yeah, it's a cool. So I don't know. Yeah, just like those two memories also kind of made anime like a sort of special, like almost dangerous, like magical thing to a young American boy mind, I guess.
Yeah. But and that makes sense. I mean, even with this movie, it's like decapitations and, you know, people's arms getting chopped off. Very, very violent. And it doesn't shy away from any of that stuff. And it goes in like straight away this giant boar demon with, you know, evil black spaghetti flowing all over it and whatever. Basically, from the second the movie starts, it's just like straight in. And I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of the opening too, it's one of my favorite openings of all of any movie ever. And I love the American dub. I'm actually like, I'm partial to the English dub. Because in the Japanese dub, they don't have an intro narrator. It's just some titles that kind of give you a backstory. But the intro to the English dub is Keith David, who does, he's such an awesome actor and voice actor. He also did the Gargoyles cartoon. If you're a 90s kid, you probably would know it. And his voice, I actually like, I considered casting him to do the intro voiceover to my film Riddle of Fire, which opens with a little poem limerick, kind of like the opening of Mononoke. And for a while I was considering getting him to do it because I'm just such a fan of his voice. I ran into him once when I had just moved to LA. I ran into him in the Verizon store and I had like just moved there. So I was like, whoa, like celebrity. And I went up to him and I was like, oh, hey, man, like, I love your voice acting, Princess Mononoke. And he's like, oh, okay. And I was like, would you ever want to work together? And he's like, you can send a letter to my production company. And he gave me the physical address to his company that I never mailed them, obviously. But I would love to cast him though to do some voice acting. Yeah, very special voice. Yeah, Mononoke and Gargoyles. But yeah, that opening though, it's fucking amazing. And then yeah, straight into like, yeah, this is going to be a hardcore fantasy action adventure that's kind of dark. Yeah, man. And yeah, the boar, the demon god, like the death and the melting and the omen that it tells them. It's so cool. Yeah, it's really intense though. Yeah, it's absolutely really intense.
Yeah, yeah. I think the voice acting across the board, I'd forgotten how many gigantic stars did the voices for it. And Neil Gaiman writing the screenplay, this is another thing that they were saying. I think the Ghibli team were saying they wanted some of the American executives removed from the poster because there were just so many like executive producers listed and like, what the fuck are all these people doing here? And instead of taking any of those people off, they took Neil Gaiman's name off of it. So he was like, yeah, nobody even knew that I was a part of it for a really long time.
I have to admit, I had no idea. I remember I've seen a video of him. It was like a meeting of Miyazaki with Weinstein and Neil Gaiman. And I was like, oh, I guess Neil Gaiman just like likes Miyazaki. I had no idea he was involved. I didn't know he did wrote the script. Damn, that's really cool. That's not cool. Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's so many great. Yeah, it's such a good dub. Billy Bob Thornton, Minnie Driver. Yeah, they're so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jada Pinkett, Claire Danes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Billy Crudup, who he plays Russell in Almost Famous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. His voice is great when it's quiet. It gets a little annoying though when he's like shouting all the time. But
it's like the morning show. He's you know, shouting pretty much constantly.
Yeah, but I think most of the English dubs are great. There's one though that I really hate and I don't watch it ever, is the Castle in the Sky dub. I think is pretty messed up. They dub the kids as with adult voices, and then Dora, the leader of the pirates, the older woman, she has like the most annoying cartoony voice that kind of kills it and just makes it really kind of too goofy for what it is. So yeah, I always watch that in the Japanese, but I do love all the English shows. Nausicaa, Patrick Stewart, and Porco Rosso, Michael Keaton, like, yeah. And Howl's Moving Castle, Christian Bale. Like, yeah, they mostly do a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Also, it's like, I've watched both English dub and Japanese on all the films, but it's like, I love to watch the dub because you don't want to look away. You don't want to read subtitles on those movies. You know, you don't want to look away for one frame. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's complicated though. Cause like, there was an issue with this, like Neil Gaiman finished his script and they made all these changes. And he said that part of it was whoever was making the decisions was very focused on the lip movements matching what the dialogue. So wanting to cut specifically so that would be the focus instead of storytelling, and that some of his work was kind of compromised because of that. But then also people making editorial decisions about certain way, you know, or the important things about the way that characters related to each other, like Ashitaka and San at the end explicitly calling each other brother and sister and making it so that it was like very explicit that this is a platonic relationship and there's nothing romantic there. And in the Japanese version, it was not made explicit at all. And it's little things that, you know, people who aren't studying the film and actually paying attention and wanting to notice those details it would just like wash over you. But the ability for people to make those kinds of changes and let them kind of fly under the radar is interesting to me. I don't think the film suffered for it, but
no, it comes down to taste, and I mean, just the person, whoever's running it, you know, it's kind of, you put it in their hands. I mean, for my film Riddle Fire, the French dub for Cannes was pretty awesome. It was cool to see it. Like, for example, there was one line where the kids are talking about this guy's special like golden chicken Valentina, and they're like, oh, Valentina laid an egg. And he says in English, oh, that's my girl. And the French dub was super poulette, which is super chicken. Like, I was like, hell yeah, that's fucking awesome. Like, I love it. But those were good people dubbing it. But yeah, speaking of that, Castle of Cagliostro, Miyazaki's like debut feature film. It wasn't Ghibli, but that the English dub is very different than the dub is very different than the sub. And it's like, it's almost a different story, like in the Japanese subtitles, like what they are saying is quite strikingly different. It's almost like a different movie. So yeah, it's cool, but it's cool because then you kind of get two different versions of the same movie. So it's like pretty sweet. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, yeah. And also what you're saying about with something like this, not having to take your eyes off of the screen to look at subtitles is a huge thing. And this is a studio that, you know, it's notorious for like the most exquisitely detailed animation and such a like incredibly fully realized world with all of these, like the creativity that goes into each new character that comes along. And you're like, who the fuck thought of that? And how did they like describe what they were thinking and get it integrate into this story so perfectly? And it's like these wild, fantastic creatures and people all coming in so beautifully depicted. It's crazy.
Good directing, good filmmaking, good mind, good writing, good auteur filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just a great person who's just very good at writing and directing and making art.
Yeah.
Yeah. And leading a team. I mean, you know, that's a whole other thing. And you know, Toshio Suzuki, his producer too, is like, he seems like kind of the best producer in the world. He just kind of seems like he's sort of his other half that or other third. And then Joe Hisashi would be the other third. But like, yeah, Suzuki, he's like, he just seems kind of like the calming, the business side, but also calming and practical and motivating in the best way. And I think like that is very important. It's a very huge part of Miyazaki's success as well.
Yeah. And also, you know, the approach to new technologies like using CGI as an enhancement a slight embellishment instead of letting it take over. When you have something, I mean, the thing I was thinking of is like the Disney Beauty and the Beast, that it was like this huge thing that they were going to use computer animation, and they have one scene where all of the money was thrown in, and it's like totally incongruous, doesn't fit in with the rest of the film, and kind of takes you out of it and looks impressive, but it's like, oh, this is the thing, instead of a movie like this where it's like there's stuff happening that you know, was done with computers, but it feels very well integrated into what's happening on the screen.
Yeah, it does. It definitely does. I don't think it was really necessary, though. I mean, I love how it looks. I wouldn't change a frame of the movie, obviously, but I don't know. I don't think it really needed it. I think he achieved equally amazing visuals in Nausicaä, Castle in the Sky. I don't know. I don't think it was that groundbreaking for the film, but it was just my opinion, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's cool. I'm glad he kind of embraced that, because he's definitely someone who's like extremely traditional and rejects a lot, and is very, very stubborn and very steadfast to what he believes in. So, I mean, I was actually surprised that he like embraced that. And then, yeah, they had to move to computers to color the whole like second half of the movie, because they were like behind schedule or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. His color designer too seems like the coolest woman. I forget her name, but she's really cool. Like she designed like Lydia Boat, like all the colors. But yeah, I remember there's a great like very long making of Princess Mononoke documentary that was made along with the film, that it's really rare. It's hard to find. Like parts of it are on some website, I forget, but it's a great like really extensive look into like mid-career Ghibli, I guess. Yeah,
that's cool. So I guess how do you think, like, what's the lasting impact that this movie's had on you from that first viewing onwards? Like, do you feel like you see its influence in your life and your work?
Yeah, absolutely. I really do. Yeah, I mean, it's probably my favorite film of all time. I mean, when I was a little kid, I remember my brother and I were always like, we wanted like a perfect movie. We're like, we want a perfect movie that had like the best action and adventure and characters and costumes and everything. And I saw it late as a young teen, but I remember when I saw it, I was like, oh, this is it. This is the perfect movie for us. But yeah, I mean, every time I watch it, I get something new from it. There's so much very ambiguous philosophy that you can understand differently depending where you, the viewer, are at in your own life. You know, you can really apply certain things to your own life depending on where you are. So every and it's always different, you know, because you're always at different points in your life, and so you can connect to it differently. And that's what I always do. I mean, I still don't even, I don't understand it fully, absolutely, and I don't really want to. Those are like the best movies, I think, are those movies that have these kind of epic, ambiguous philosophies that you really aren't totally 100% sure, you don't understand in full. And so every time you watch it, you get new things. Kind of like Ghost in the Shell too. I feel like that film is also like every time you watch it, you get new things, and you kind of, it's more and more and more relevant. So yeah, and then with the whole vibe, and I don't know, forest adventures are just very close to me, because I grew up on a mountain in a forest, and so enchanted forests and beautiful forests and animals are very much my thing. So yeah, it's definitely has a huge lasting impression on me. Absolutely, yeah,
amazing. Well, I think that is a lovely note to finish on. Thank you so much. This has been really nice.
Cool. Thank you, Adam. Great to talk to you.
All right. Take care.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks again to Weston for chatting with me. You can and should watch his film Riddle of Fire immediately. And that's about it this time around. Please follow me on social media at Spark Parade. Please rate the show 5 stars and leave me a lovely little review wherever you can. And until next time, bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video. Find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.